Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So then I wanted to just share a dream, and I'll share it really briefly. I won't give you all the details, but it was an interesting dream in that the night before I was doing the pattern of always feeling insecure and unsafe in the world. And the dream, and in the dream that night, what came up was that I was in this, trying to get to work to see a client, and I was late. And I had to go into this building, but the building had a spiral type of a staircase for whatever reason. And I was sliding down, and I couldn't get to where my office was, and I kept sliding down. And then when I looked down there, I was so frustrated because I was so late, and I was looking down, and I saw that if I dropped, I would die. And there was a part of me just said, fine, I'm just dropping. I don't care anymore. But I was still frustrated, still motivated to get to see the client. And I slipped and was holding onto the edge of this office building. And I looked up, and there was this guy talking on the phone. And I said to him, help me, I can't get up. And I was so mad at him because he was so self-centered that he wasn't helping me. Couldn't he see that I was struggling, yada, yada, yada. And he says, look right there. There's this spot. All you have to do is unleash your hands and grab this thing, and you can, and it'll save you. I don't need to save you. And so I didn't want to grab it because there was a part of me was just so furious that he was not helping me, and that I figured I'm just going to drop. But then something, I just decided in my dream to grab it. And when I grabbed it, what came out, which was kind of silly and stupid, was this dental floss. And in my dream, my gut said, just wrap yourself around the dental floss and you'll be fine. And as soon as I did that, in my dream, I had this total sense of peace, like this complete sense of wellness, that I was completely safe. And I recognized it in my dream as the work that I was doing the night before, I mean, before I went to sleep. And it was just this amazing experience of getting to see that this is what I do in all my life, all over my life, is that I want someone else to fix it, or I'm just going to give up and say, fuck it. And yet what's there is right in front of me to make me feel safe and whole if I just be with it. I can't explain any more than that, but I thought the dream was just an amazing experience of being able to, it's such an amazing response to my work that I did the night before about feeling safe and secure in the world. And then I got to show, it got to show out in my, my dream. And, then I had, one other question was that I was doing, I'm afraid to public speak. In fact, it's really hard for me even to talk on the phone. And that's the only piece that I get caught up in is not an illusion. So when I went and did a talk the other day, and there were 24 people there, and I got to see, you know, within about 5 minutes, I felt like I was losing their attention. I just split off and disassociated and got all scared, and, you know, just the talk didn't go well. And I, for the last couple of, for the last couple of weeks, I've been doing the process and working through that and really getting to see that I wait for people outside of me to reflect who I am. Like, if I'm doing well, then I feel better. Or, you know, like, somehow the people out there are reflections of me, and I have to, and it limits my self-expression because, whether they're approving of me or disapproving of me or whatever. And so what I got was that somewhere I'm still stuck in that they're not an illusion when I get into that spot. Because if I'm making everything up and I believe that everything's an illusion, when I'm in those kinds of situations, it does not feel like an illusion at all. And when I'm in the front of a room with people, it's hard to difficult to do the process, you know, to go, okay, this is an illusion, yada, yada. So that's all I have to check in with.
Okay.
Oh, hello, Robert. Hello, Robert. This is Jim from New Zealand here.
Hey, Jim.
How are you going? Robert, since I've got some incredible experiences, since coming back from Washington at the gathering of the adept, some of the adept members here in Washington, for quite some time I've been feeling this incredible feeling of joyfulness, and when I went there, I had quite an experience with something that I'd related some story about a way that I was able to help one of my sons with a particular difficulty he was having, and I remember that you said to me, for me, that it was a wonderful opportunity for me to appreciate myself for what I'd done. instead of the particular way I'd helped him, the way that I'd done it because I appreciated him so much. But it made me realize, it hit me that, boy, this is something I'm not doing. I'm really not appreciating myself for the different, for the way that I'm expanding in this particular instance and several others. And anyway, that was great. After leaving there, before we came back to New Zealand, we'd enjoyed ourselves so much in San Francisco that we went there for another 4 days before coming back here. And it was had a wonderful time there. We got a couple of trail bikes, and we went over the Golden Gate Bridge back again, which was fantastic, and see that magnificent harbour there that we'd created. And then we came along from the... We did a scenic trip along the coast and on these bikes, and we spent about... I think we spent 7 hours, and before we got lost a few times, but that was a lot of fun. And then we came back and... We bought the bikes back, and then we came back to New Zealand. And it was, I think I've mentioned before that I've been, for quite some years now, that I've been formed a relationship with a doctor who is very much into the health side and the wellness side of the human experience. And he was, every year I'd gone there, and the idea, of course, is to see how much your health has improved from the previous year and how you're holding up to different things. And I went to just a couple of weeks after coming back, I had this these series of tests, etc. And then when I went to see him for the evaluation and further tests, after all the blood tests and everything had come back in, he was saying how great I looked, and I always create him to give me a good rap on how well I'm doing with these with health-wise, etc., and the way I'm sort of holding myself together. And anyway, with his after he'd done the evaluation and told me about how well I was doing with things, I asked him. I said, "Well, there's something that I've been wondering about for a while," and I said, "How was the actual test there's a test that you have for to see if there's anything going on that might be going on untoward in the bowel, in the illusion." And He said, well, no, he said everything was fine there, the actual smear test that you do with the samples, et cetera, and that. He said, no sign of any blood there, nothing untoward. And I said, well, I said, just recently, I said, I've noticed that there's been a change in my bowel habits, and I get the impression that things have changed a bit in that particular area. And he said, well, he said, one thing we can do about it, he said, fine. He said, we can get your colonoscopy. And that, of course, is, I didn't have much idea about what that was about because I've never had anything like that done before. And he made this appointment for me with a specialist. And anyway, it was incredible because I've been thinking now, everything's an illusion, and I'm actually giving power to this creation of mine of being the body by going and doing these tests. And really, I don't really need to do this. I don't really need to do this test. And it was, but yet I had this nagging feeling that this was something I must experience. And looking at things from the viewpoint of my expanded beingness, it made me, I thought, now this is something that I've got to experience. So I went along, did the looking forward to the test. The test was done, and after the recovery, when I was in the recovery area afterwards, he said, my wife was there as well because it was after having the sedation while this examination was taking place. She was there with me, and of course she had to drive me back afterwards because you can't drive back after having that that procedure. And then he said, we struck a bit of a problem in that you have a tumour in your lower bowel, and it is, we couldn't go the full distance because of the particular camera, etc., that they put up there. It's an incredible device they have, and we couldn't really get past that particular part of the lower bowel to see what the rest was like. And the first thing that came to my mind was, wow, what an experience this is going to be. And it was, and I actually said that, and Isabel said, that's an experience that we don't want. And then, of course, she created it to feel upset about the whole thing, which is really a reflection of me, the way that the particular layers I must have had on this particular fear of creation, or the fact that not being able to relate as to what was real and what was not real, etc. But I've had this feeling of such joyfulness for so long, and that it seemed to be washing over anything else. And then when we left there, he said, we'll refer you to the surgeon and et cetera, and then there'll be further tests, et cetera, and then there'll be a scan and to see if there's any scatter from the particular cancer. Cancer was a word that would really give me creeps. But however, not in this particular case. So anyway, this all happened at the end of August. That was after coming back from San Francisco. And so the next thing was to go and get a scan, body scan, to see what what the rest of the to see if there'd been any scatter from the particular from the tumour, the cancer. And I kept thinking how brilliant this whole thing was. Here's me really putting all this power into the creation that my body was real, and that and it had become something that I remember you'd said at one stage that on one of the adept calls that we had, you'd mentioned something about that could well be as somebody gets older that they do start to the body becomes an area that there's they find a lot of power to be reclaimed from. So when we went, we had the after the result of the scan was that with the actual debriefing I had afterwards with the surgeon to be, it would appear in the illusion that there was no actual scatter in the lymph glands, but the liver, there were a few sort of ominous little patches in the liver. So I thought, well, isn't that interesting? So when I saw it up on the screen and thought, now this is going to be quite an experience. But more from the point of view of the excitement of something that I'd never experienced before, and then I was told about the hospitalisation. Well, I've never in my lifetime been in a hospital, or not horizontal in the hospital. I'd gone to many a time visiting friends there, and I'd never found it a particular... I'd go there because of my relationship with friends, etc., and when they're ill, and or family dying, etc. But it was never a very comfortable place for me. But I was chafing at the bit to get in and experience this thing. And those feelings, as I mentioned to Isabel and my friends, I've never felt better and more joyful in my whole life as I am now. I have no pain. I have no pain from this cancer. It's going to be incredible. So anyway, I went in on the 2nd of October. 2nd of October, and this shows how recent all this is. 2nd of October, I went in and I had the actual operation, and the whole draft of the whole drama was unfolding in as the surgeon had said. She said that this would happen, that would happen, we'd do this, we'd do that, and etc. And I thought, my gee, that's an incredible script, that one. So anyway, after going into the when I came out of the theatre, I came around in the in my room. The first thing I had to see things. So I got myself. I had tubes coming out of every orifice in my body, and it was. I couldn't feel them because I'd had this anesthetic. They didn't give me an epidural for a reason. If I remember, I'll tell you afterwards. But they gave me the it was as I understand the morphine, and so. But there's no pain, which they told me. Well, you've still got that. You've got that particular the anesthetic takes about 24 hours to wear off, and but they had a little handheld self-service pain relief, which you push a button and then it would give you a squirt of up through another one of those tubes, and then it would said if there's any pain at all, just do that. And I said, well, I've really got no pain, so there's nothing to worry about. And they said, well, give it a squirt so that we know, push that button, see if a little light comes on, and then we'll know that you know it's working and you know how to do it. And I said, okay, so I did that. But having a look, I kept thinking how brilliant the whole thing is. And the nurses were, of course, they were doing a brilliant job in being caring, and a whole aspect of me. That was incredible, the way that everything was, the whole scenario was developing. And with the, I looked at where the plaster was and the sticky plaster over the wound, etc. And that, and looked at then I just had to look for that bag, and sure the bag was there, and because I'd performed a ileostomy, and they had so what they'd done in the doctor was explaining that the tumour was they had to take quite a bit of my bowel out, and it was over a foot. That's 350 millimetres, and they had all this was incredibly new and brilliant to me because boy, the body's quite a creation, but with the whole way the intestines are set up, the way that they can cut down the body in the illusion, cut it down, and everything seems so real because they explain the fact that they have to take all the intestine out from the body cavity, the way that they and they feed it out. They check the whole thing. It's like pulling a rope out of an anchor well on a boat, and they check everything. They chop off the part of the part that the cancer is in the bowel. They stitch what's left of that end of the bowel, as I understand, to the what's left of the anus, etc. And that, and then they cut off. I didn't see this, but I mean, this is all explained as far as to get the whole scenario of the thing. And then they cut off the where the intestine joins the bowel, and then they cut a hole in the side of the stomach, and then they push this through, and then so you really. All your solid waste come through the intestine into this magnificent bag that they have at the side. Now, I had always anything to do. Any time when I'd had a flight of fantasy about what would be the worst things that could happen to anybody, and I thought one of the worst things that could happen would be for probably an accident right in the intestines and that, and then a hell of a mess, etc. And that, and it didn't bear thinking about. And then the other one was that bowel cancer and having to have one of those bags. And I know there's a friend of mine that that had bowel cancer, and he had this this bag, and it was something that really I felt uncomfortable even talking to him with thinking about it. But when I looked at it and thought how brilliant the whole thing was, and then the way how I'd done a little bit of reading beforehand about when the way that this bag worked, etc., and that. And I thought, well, that's going to be what an experience. I mean, who would have thought? Who would have thought that something like this could come along? Something I've never ever experienced before. I've never ever been in the hospital before. What an experience! And then to see this bag. And the way the whole thing works, and all they could, when they'd come in, and that, because I was in sort of intensive care because of a few funny things that happened under the anaesthetic, etc. And as they'd come in and ask me how I felt, I'd say brilliant, and I really felt brilliant. It was. There was no. On this first day, there was no pain. Of course, while I still had the in the illusion, had the anaesthetic, was still taking care of that. But no fear, just confidence, and this feeling of expanded beingness over the whole thing. It was incredible. And then. The nurses were. I just couldn't believe. It was all. I could see the whole thing was a scenario. The whole thing was an incredible game. And this body of mine was one of the. One of the actual. The heroes of the piece. In talking in entertainment ways. But anyway, the. The anaesthetist came in and he told me, he said, you're a miracle man. And I don't know, I've found recently that I've found it quite easy to express things in just the way that things happen. And it's a phase two situation. And he said, you're a miracle man. I said, I know. And I said, but that's two of us, the miracle man. Not only me, Charles. You're also the miracle man too. And it's very hard to explain these different things. But anyway, the first day, not even 24 hours after the operation, I said, when can I start to get mobile again? They said, well, we can send a few nurses in. You can get out of bed and stand up and turn around, and that makes sure we have the nurses there to make sure that all this all the tubes stay in place, etc., and that. So what they did that on the day after the operation, and I will admit that I felt a bit woozy afterwards, but still no pain. It was just a nausea creation, I suppose. They kept saying, well, you know, don't be a hero, just give a squirt on that thing. But I had no pain. I said, the only time I have any pain, and this is after all the anaesthetic had worked out of the system on the first day, And I said, the only time I do feel any discomfort is when I sort of move and then I pull on these stitches and that, which I could see there and that. And I said, that's the only time. But then the pain stops as soon as I stop straining against it. So there's no point in taking it because it's not there. But when the on the second day, the it was amazing, the whole vocabulary around the place with the nurses. When the nurses came in on the second day, they said, "Well, we've come in to play with you." I said, "Oh, that's great. Anything, you know, that'll be fine. You know, what do you got in mind?" They said, "We're going to get you out of bed and we're going to take you for a walk." And they had sticks and little stands and that. There were three of them. And then I was able to swing myself out of bed, stand up. And then they had to bring all this tubing, all this life support or whatever, plus the bag, of course. And they had to get, and then I walked around the bed, and then I walked back again, and I was supposed to be unstable, but it was incredible, it was brilliant. And then when I got back into bed, no problem at all with moving around, a few little bit of discomfort on pulling different areas and that. And anyway, they still they said, "Well, you know, you always use that thing." And I said, no, I don't feel I like using it. So, because my whole idea was, I've got experience. This is a unique experience. I've heard of others who've said what this and that and whatever it may be, and there must be layers somewhere of these particular beliefs and that I have and different experiences that I've resisted experiencing. And but the thing was all awash with joyfulness. And then when the second and third day came and that, and then they explained to me that how's your stomach feeling and that, and of course eating practically nothing and that, etc., to get the whole, because when they explained to me when all the intestines are taken out and put back in again, and because they do it without any, to make sure that there's no knots or anything like that in it, they're going to cause complications afterwards, but then they actually get the they take a little while to settle down because there's a few little kinks there. So when you're taking in any food and anything into the stomach, there's a bit of a hold up in the stomach, and there's with bile etc. and that is being poured in there to digest anything that may be there, and it's not getting away or as it should be, and it's a whole more or less a whole new sort of rabbit hole for the food to get through the intestine on way to the bag. So anyway, the actual I had, that was when I had some real discomfort. And the discomfort was they explained to me it was the bile in the stomach, that was, it was a more or less a regurgitating and a burning sensation, and most uncomfortable. And anyway, the way that, the amazing thing about it was, it was like a, when I had this absolute feeling of the brilliance of the whole creation, and the fact that the actual the joyfulness, which is which comes, it's something past the intellectual understanding that there's going to be joyfulness, etc., and that's my natural state. But it was a knowingness that this was my natural state, this joyfulness, and then I'd say, now this discomfort, and it was like a type of, I suppose, you get the when you're downloading something on a computer and then you see the actual progress with the little dashes that show the progress that's made, and then it seems to always slow down a bit near the end, and this discomfort was just like that. It was not a feeling of discomfort in the sense that it was painful. It was just more or less like a progression of it was all awash with joyfulness and it feels so different. Except for the end, when you get near the end, when you're downloading something, and then when you get near the end, and then it seems to stop, and then seems to take a lot longer to get that last few percentage down. And except for then, and then I looked on that there. Now that is a resistance to experiencing the whole thing. But anyway, I better cut it a bit short on that part because, I mean, that was only a few weeks ago that I had this this operation. It was brilliant the time I had there. It was an experience of a human lifetime. And then when the I came back on, I got back home. Did a lot of walking around the place. I was amazed at the at my particular experience, the way that things went. The actual joyfulness in these incredible nurses, they kept there was so much banter, and there was so much. When I'd laugh, of course, there would be discomfort, but it was a brilliant discomfort. It was, and they were incredible. It was a wonderful experience. And then, of course, the support group of the family, etc., and that they had a great time with coming. The grandchildren came up because I think they thought that I might be the last time they'd see me in that, but it's. I had a treatment store for them there, but anyway, when I came back home, and which was just on the about 10 days ago, I think it was, and everything is brilliant. Every time I look at that bag, every time I change it, incidentally, the actual script reads that it'll I've got it'll be reversed. And then they'll go back onto the old system when they connect me up again, because the idea is to give the bowel a bit of a bit of a rest and that. And then they connect it all up again to a more conventional way of doing it. But anyway, the meantime, I've got the. The interesting parts now are where this is all so brilliant, the whole thing, but I haven't done a great deal of reclaiming of power because it hasn't felt that way. It's been a matter of the knowing the truth and that about who I really am, and it is that part hasn't been coming into it so much. But in the next reclaiming power and that, but in the next just looking at the calendar now, that next week I go into to have an appointment with the oncologist. Then I move on to the liver surgeon, which is on next Thursday, and then the cardiologist, which I have an appointment with on the following the Tuesday after that, and then the 2 weeks after that they do the reversal, and then they start. I've got to see somebody on chemotherapy, and all these are things that. Entirely, all I've got to go on, I suppose, if you don't really go on other people's experiences from that point of view, because I mean, this is going to be unique for me. But now I feel that there is everything's been absolutely brilliant, and the rest will be brilliant. But I can see that there's going to be a bit of a change in the experience, all in joyfulness, though, of reclaiming power of these particular areas that I've been unwilling to experience, these particular areas of my hologram. And so they are to come, but that's all part of the brilliant game. And for those that we all experience things so differently, but for those who think it's a long journey and that before they reach a particular goal, every day's experience is a new goal, but when the over the period that it doesn't happen overnight, and it's I started the seven power centers course in it would be December. It'd be in January 2005. So that's getting on over. It's over 30 odd, and getting on near 3 years. And all of that's been. It's been an incredible journey, and it's still continuing to be such an incredible journey. But once the intellectual understanding of what this human experience is about and who we really are, and just intellectually understanding, but then it's just that tip over into the fact of where you absolutely have, when you have the direct experience of and the infinite certainty that it's the truth, that we are who we are. And then things start to happen. Well, they've always been starting to happen, and that's not the way of putting it, but it's been so incredible, and this is something that does happen. And experiences are different. It's taken me so far to get where I am with the expansion of my infinite beingness, but it's that we've all got different ways of getting there, and it's and all our experiences are so different, and it's just these unique experiences and how unique we are, and that is that's the joy of this whole experience, and there's going to be a lot more. I just take it as a day. Nothing's actually created until it happens. And but it's interesting. And I'm doing some stretching exercises on the on the actual these particular operations, etc., and the what it appears in the script that's going to that which can change. Anything can change. It can be at any time, just a stroke of anything by my expanded self can throw in anything. There's infinite possibilities, but just to take them as they come. And but I'm stretching on some of these things about what ifs. What if I had this particular thing? What would there, what discomfort would there be there? And to give me the opportunity of bringing up these particular areas where I have put these layers and layers of layers and of making these of thinking that all these illusions are real, and so anyway, that's about it. But I will say though that the actual way that the things have gone, the way how dearly I value the you, Robert, and as an aspect of me, and also Helena, give appreciation for her blog, etc., and that. And there's little things there, little to think that this is all an extension of infinite beingness, and it's just like that. Well, I thank you all immensely, and all on the call too, that the different aspects I see of myself, etc., in all of us. Thank you so much. It's been fantastic.
Wow, that's an extraordinary story, Jim. Doesn't surprise me, given what I know about you. But man, it illustrates so many aspects of the game that have been communicated in so many ways. And I just, I was gonna say a bunch of things, and now I just think like most of what you just said speaks for itself. But there's one thing I just would like to highlight. And it gets back to something that I said earlier, which is about what an octopus judgment is. If this was a live event and you stood up and you shared that, I could say to the audience, raise your hand if the thought crossed your mind, why would an infinite being at a very expanded place, because Jim has been playing this game aggressively for coming up on 3 years, as he said, he has expanded hugely. Why would somebody in that kind of a scenario choose to create something like that? You know, and it's just when judgment knocks out and it's all just experiences and it's all you just playing in consciousness and the judgment drops out, which you cannot imagine what it would be like until you get there. Experiences are just experiences. There isn't anything that you wouldn't want to do. There isn't anything that's bad. It gets into how insidious judgment is. And it also illustrates the point that's been shared a lot, which is that it's not the experiences that bring you joyfulness. It's your joyfulness that you take into all your experiences, no matter what they are, making them joyful experiences, which Jim so brilliantly illustrated in his narrative. It's just extraordinary, Jim. And you know, one other comment you made about how I encouraged you to appreciate yourself more, you have a great opportunity to appreciate yourself off the charts for this. For you to be in joyfulness in an experience that you in phase one and for a long time maybe even in phase two and that most of the people on the call would say was a terrible, painful, unfortunate, whatever experience, for you to have the experience that you had just shows, for lack of a better term, how far you've come. How far you've come on this journey. And beyond just appreciating the experience in the way that you did, which is awesome and which will continue to expand, take some time to pat yourself on the back for this as being, for lack of a better term, a gigantic cookie of the progress that you've made and the rewards, in a sense, for lack of a better term, for all of the effort that you put into playing this game, that you could go into an experience like that and have it be purely joyful. That is an extraordinary achievement. And it is something to really appreciate yourself for. There was a lot of appreciating of the experience as it was unfolding. And I would invite you to expand that a little bit more into you as the creator of it and how far you had to have come on your journey in the last 3 years to be able to have an experience like that. And I just salute you. You know, hats off to you, bud.
Yeah,
extraordinary.
Brilliant. Thank you, Jim. Thank you. That was wonderful to hear. I was sitting here, this is Gloria, I was just feeling all this joy and bliss coming out of me just listening to that experience, and I was laughing. It was so wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Feline. I want to say the same, that it was an amazing experience to be here and to be part of the conversation and to get infinite beingness and connectedness. I felt myself expanding. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Jim. This is Gene in Seattle. That was an incredible story, and it gives us all great things to expect if we walk this path.
You're brilliant. You're brilliant.
Jim, this is Carolyn from Los Angeles. I'm the person you spoke earlier, and I'm even trying to take your lead, Robert, and appreciate myself for creating you and this story, Jim. I can't think of something. I'm so full. I can't think of a more brilliant experience for me to have in the place I'm in than to have you here in my world on this call for all of us and but for me specifically. If we're all creating you, and if Robert and I are created you to look at, even if I'm creating you to look at my dilemma, I bless you. I bless myself for hearing you and being here today. It's just full of joy. You are extraordinary.
You're beautiful. Mm-hmm. You're beautiful.
Nobody wants to follow your act, Jim.
Oh, gee, we've all got some incredible acts, I'm sure.
we just want to sit here in the bliss you've created.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I'm going to have to drain the swamp shortly. So.
Oh gosh.
This is Celine in Los Angeles. Robert, I had kind of a request. Just maybe if you could expand a bit on living in reactive mode, like is it just a gut feeling? It's a voice in the head. I mean, I get intuition and I get like when I'm called, but I thought maybe it might be interesting to hear more about that.
I can give you a little bit, and like everything else, the intellectual concepts are kind of like crutches. They can help you get around for a while, and then ultimately they get discarded and you just move on your own. So that's the case in so many of these things, because when you expand to the point that you have direct experiences of certain aspects of the truth, it so blows away any intellectual anything. So I can give you some pieces, but ultimately you'll just naturally open into an experience of what it really means beyond anything that I can give you. But the intellectual piece that I can give you is that and I have to speak a little generally here to start it out. In phase one, for most people, what gets created is a hyper-proactive kind of a mentality. It's experiencing illusions and wanting to immediately leap on them and do something with them, and always being in action and swirling around doing things, which is usually trying to change, fix, or improve the illusion, but it's just, it's a lot of busyness, and if it's not busyness in your life, then it's busyness in your head, but the overall experience is just constant busyness. And it's push, 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 push. Reactive mode is changing that, and some of it looks and feels different than phase one, and some of it doesn't, because essentially we're living in phase one in reactive mode too. It's just our approach is different because we don't have as many options. But in phase two, reactive mode means this. All day long, in general, one of two things is happening to you. You are creating an illusion that appears to be outside of you that seems to be requiring a response or a decision from you. And that could be somebody asking you a question. That could be you picking up the phone and somebody saying, do you want this? Do you want that? It could be whatever it is. But a person, place, things, a voice in your head, whatever, gets created that seems to require a response from you, that you do something or you say something or you make a decision or whatever it is. That's scenario one. You create an illusion that seems to require a response from you. The second scenario in reactive mode is you don't create anything outside of you that appears to be requiring a response, but inside of you, you feel a motivation to say something or do something or go somewhere or, you know, whatever. So those are the two pieces of reactive mode. And speaking generally, and there isn't very long here when I say wait for, but in essence, speaking generally, you wait for one of those two things to happen. And if there doesn't appear to be anything outside of you that seems to be requiring a response, and if you don't feel motivated to say or do anything or go anywhere, and you're just kind of being in a moment, then you just be. But you wait for one of the other two things to happen. And again, you're not sitting around twiddling your thumbs very long, but I'm just illustrating this in this way, breaking it into the pieces. And when one of those two things happens, you feel an internal motivation to act, so to speak, or something outside of you seems to be requiring a response from you, you then take a look at it and you say, am I uncomfortable about this? In either scenario, something outside of you is requiring a response or something inside of you is motivating you to act. You just look, is there discomfort there? If there is, you have the opportunity, not the mandate, you have the opportunity to use the tools. In most cases, the process, unless you're at the point that you're using the skybox process, and to use it over and over and over until you don't feel any discomfort, and then you see what you feel like doing to respond. That's the opportunity that you have, to use the tools one or more times and continually look at the scenario, your own motivation to act, or the outside that seems to be requiring a response, and you say, well, what do I feel motivated or inspired to do? And then you do it. But there's no rules or formulas here. You flow with it. If you create somebody outside of you, the illusion of somebody outside of you that seems to be requiring a response, and you're really uncomfortable, but you feel in the moment, despite the discomfort, motivated to say or do something in response without using the tools, then you trust and you go with that. But the opportunity you have in phase two that you did not have in phase one is that in either scenario, you have the opportunity to use the tools or parts of them. When I say parts of them, I mean you can always appreciate, you can always tell the truth about something in the fly without using all of the steps of the tools. So you have the opportunity to use the tools, some or all of them, or pieces of them, before you do anything or say anything or respond. You have the opportunity to use the tools one or more times and then respond. Or again, if you just feel motivated to respond without using any tools, then you do that. But that's what reactive mode means. You, in essence, wait until you either feel an internal motivation to take an action, so to speak, which could be saying or doing, or you wait to create an illusion that seems to require a response, and then you say, what do I feel motivated and inspired to do here? Am I uncomfortable? If you are, you have the opportunity to use the process. If you're not uncomfortable, but it's an illusion that's limiting or restricting you, you have the opportunity to use the mini process. You can always appreciate, tell the truth, and use the vocabulary tool. And you can always use the skybox process if you want to, but those are the general guidelines. And you have the opportunity to do it one or more times and then continually say, what do I feel motivated or inspired to do now? Say something, do something, take an action, or keep using the tools. And coming out the other end and then saying, now what do I feel motivated or inspired to do? The purest opportunity that you have, which again is not a rule or a formula, but the purest opportunity you have is to live that way. And if you're uncomfortable, continue to apply the process over and over and over and over again until you can consider that particular response and feel no discomfort at all. And then you do what you feel motivated or inspired to do. And sometimes you may do that, and sometimes you may not. It doesn't matter. You trust what you feel motivated or inspired to do. But the key is you have the option to use the tools when you did not in phase one, and that you're always responding. Reactive mode could also be called responsive mode or responding mode. I just call it reacting because, to me, it's reacting to something that you're creating that's in motion, versus trying to push something somewhere or be proactive or do something without there necessarily being any real provocation or decision point. You're reacting to an illusion that's in motion, using the tools or not, and waiting for something to get created to respond to, versus just running all over the place doing stuff. Does that help?
Yeah, that's actually perfect. That's just what I needed to hear. Thank you.
Okay. Wonderful.
Robert? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I had to unmute myself. This is Susan. As I make the shift from into phase two, as I'm in phase two, I'm so used to thinking about intention and law of attraction and all of that, and so is that something that I just let go of? And I know I've read about what you said about that, but it actually doesn't really work. So how can I bring myself to this, given that I have such a strong background with that?
Okay, first I want to correct something just simply about this, and then I'll answer your question more literally. It's not that it doesn't work. It's that it doesn't work in the way that it's described consistently or reliably. But clearly there is success story, just to use that term, after success story of people who have used the law of attraction and other manifestation techniques and self-help techniques, and there was a cause and effect relationship between using the technique and getting something that was judged as good. So clearly sometimes it appears to work. And when it does, it's because that's very supportive for that illusion to get created. My point is twofold. One is it doesn't work the way it is expressed, because if it does, then it would have to work all the time. And it doesn't work all the time. In fact, it fails more than it succeeds if you really look honestly. So it doesn't work the way they say it does. It's not infallible. It's not a law. And it cannot take you into where phase two can take you, because essentially it's a phase one tool. And even if you create a particular outcome using the law of attraction or some other tool that you judge as good, you're still creating a cool thing within a context of being convinced that you're the opposite of who you really are and that the illusion is real. So you're still playing the phase one game, even if within that game you've created a cool thing. Now, that's not bad. That doesn't mean you're less than or less evolved or anything else. It's just a truthful description of what's going on. It doesn't expand you or take you into playing without limits or restrictions. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that. other answer to your question is you don't have to come up with a strategy or a formula for how to deal with this right now. Playing the phase two game in the beginning for quite a while is living in reactive mode like I just described. And using the tools and where it takes you. And continuing to expand every time you use a tool. If you believe in the law of attraction and similar kinds of things, and you have gotten results, so to speak, from doing it, simply deciding, oh, intellectually, oh, well, that's bullshit now, isn't going to do anything because you still have a lot of power in believing that it's real and that it works and that it's a powerful technique. So you just live in reactive mode. And if something comes across you in your life, like we've talked about multiple times on this call, where you feel like using the law of attraction in the way that you've used it or some other technique, and you feel like using it to try and change or fix or improve something, then use it. If you're uncomfortable about that, then you have an opportunity to use the process where you didn't before. If you're using the law of attraction and you simply take the opportunity to remind yourself that you're the one with the power, and that nothing is being attracted, and that you're creating everything and all this other stuff, you take the opportunity to remind yourself of the truth, that's very supportive. Ultimately, if you continue playing the phase two game and you expand to a certain point, you will naturally open up into a space, for lack of a better term, where you just won't have any desire to use any of that anymore. And you'll have a direct experience of the fact of what you've heard me say intellectually. You'll get to that point at some point, but you can't think your way there. You can't self-discipline your way there, particularly if you really believe in this. So you just live in reactive mode. You take it a moment at a time. You use the tools when you're uncomfortable primarily for quite a while, and the other tools when you're not. And the whole thing about law of attraction or any technique in any aspect of life will take care of itself as you continue to expand. But you can't goof anything up. There are no musts or must-nots. It's not a no-no to try and use the law of attraction to produce a particular result when you're playing the phase two game. But like I've mentioned many times in this call and before, you have the opportunity now, playing the phase two game, to use all or part of a tool while you are doing something else, which is not an option that you had in phase one. And so by using all or part of a tool, you're supporting yourself and expanding. And as you expand, the rest of it will take care of itself. And naturally, you'll let go of the crutches, so to speak, just like you do when your leg heals from a broken leg and you don't need the additional support anymore. All of these kinds of tools and techniques and stuff from phase one are like that. They're crutches. And ultimately, you won't need them, so you'll let them go. But there's no hurry. There's no reason that you have to say, I cannot ever da-da-da-da again, because now I understand it's not real or it doesn't work the way they said it does. There's no rule or formula for that. On my journey, I had my system that I called the 11th element, which was a phase one creation. And when I moved into phase two, I just spontaneously lost the motivation to use it. I didn't wake up one day and say, oh, well, I'm in the phase two game now, I can't use that anymore. I just lost the desire to use it almost instantly because of understanding and getting what was really going on. But I could have just as easily done it differently. So just let it be. It'll take care of itself. But if there's discomfort related to it, or there's discomfort in the scenarios when you feel motivated to use a technique like that, then you have the opportunity to use the tools.
Good. Thank you very much.
I'm going to stop here with the recording for a second, just a minute.